like a missile silo, to maximize the use of space. The stasis capsules hung on racks and were packed tightly together. Each one contained a person, and when the racks moved to accept new residents, it always reminded Bruce of clothes at a dry cleaner. Sad to think that this is where they would all be heading soon. Unless Mike pulled through for them this time. He eased back warily in the roller chair that was opposite Dennis.
You're certain there's nothing that can be done? Not without risking the community?
Dennis regarded his own data pad as he spoke, tapping on it lightly.
3 weeks minimum before we could try again. And even then, I'd suggest a full month. The barrier programs were just barely able to give us a full minute of transmission time. I'll need to work on a few more to be safe. Developing the encryption will take time.
A whole month out there. He hated this.
Feels like we're in a damn submarine, so blind to everything. She's in the best hands possible, Bruce. Mike's the best scout we've had in a generation. And if his younger brother is anything like him, I'd say doubly so.
That was one way to look at it.
Did you go see their mother? Dennis asked. Like you said?
That sent another knot twisting through his stomach. He'd meant to, but in the end he just hadn't had the courage. Not to look the woman in the eye. A woman whose sickness he had used to manipulate her own son. A woman he could have cured with an executive decision, but chose not to, because he needed to keep sending Mike back. Needed to keep him searching for the panacea that would one day save them all. Heaven forgive me. History was repeating itself. And now both her sons were on the surface, thanks to him. But then so was his daughter. Karma indeed. He deserved every second of it.
It would have been too awkward, he said eventually. I sent the normal detail instead. They said she signed the non-disclosure, no problem.
Do you think she suspects?
Bruce merely shrugged. She's a smart woman. She can put two and two together. But it won't matter. Not now. We're all sitting on a 6-month timeline, just like her.
4 months, Dennis said. Bruce perked up at that.
What?
The hub population is using more of our hard resources than I first calculated. The air scrubbers alone are a huge sink. Almost 100 million hard credits a day.
Mercy. What are the reserves down to now?
Dennis regarded his data pad again.
30%, give or take? With the population holding at 1.1 million, I'll probably need to lower the hard limit again to 500K this time.
More tension knotted his stomach, though this was of the normal variety. His usual cocktail laced with the stress of having to somehow keep this sinking ship afloat.
Any suggestions? We could turn them off.
What?
The air scrubbers for the hub. We could turn them off.
Bruce scoffed, but then stopped short when he saw that Dennis wasn't joking.
You're serious? It would buy us another month.
Fire and sickness lit within his stomach.
What do you mean, us? Do you not consider those people a part of us?
They're a minority that have a negative impact on the economy and use far more resources than anyone else. When it comes to a triage situation, they're the obvious first choice. Sacrifice them to ensure the majority survive. It's just logic, Bruce.
Bruce glared at him. You'd sacrifice 100,000 people.
The software engineer just shrugged.
You asked for a suggestion. I gave you one. I didn't say it would be palatable. We're approaching the time for tough decisions, Bruce, and you're the man who's been elected to make them.
Well, thank goodness for that, Bruce said with disdain.
I don't want to hear another suggestion like that again, you hear? Ever. Not while I still hold responsibility for this city. I'd rather see us all perish as equals than see a few survive off the backs of those we considered less worthy to live.
Dennis chortled.
You can save the speeches for the board meeting. I'm sure we'll be having one soon enough to discuss this very topic. In the meantime, do you have a solution?
Resentment lingered in Bruce's psyche at the challenge.
How Dennis could even have conceived of such a notion, he'd never know. But then, perhaps he'd spent so much time battling those damn AIs, he was starting to think like one.
Run another lottery to incentivize the full immersion vacation program. If you need less people in the hubs, then I'd rather see them here in stasis, burning half the resources, than melting down in the vats.
Dennis smiled like a crocodile.
As you wish, Mr. Chairman.
Chapter 5. Ties That Bind.
I'm still trying to comprehend the latest bombshell from my big brother. He couldn't have said what I think he did.
What do you mean, no one knows? I say. You're telling me no one knows where the heck we even live?
Yes, Maxis says, a bit testily. That's exactly what I'm telling you. We broadcast randomly and blindly so that the true location of Citadel remains unknown, even to us.
You can't be serious, Gilly says. How does that make any kind of sense?
It's for our protection, Rembrandt says. And Citadel's. If we knew the location in relation to the real world, we could be interrogated by the AIs, and then they'd have a clear path to find and destroy us.
Holy crap. This is sounding more and more like a nightmare. So how are we supposed to find it, then?
Maxis folds his arms and lets out a sigh.
I don't know yet.
The table goes quiet as everyone digests what we just heard. The doors open then, and Wilbur enters. Behind him are a couple of young boys carrying a large pot and a basket.
Your meal,
he announces as the boys set the pot on the table, along with wooden bowls and a few loaves of bread. The interruption is a welcome distraction from our shell shock, and we thank him before digging in. We don't say much as we eat, perhaps still trying to come to grips with the situation. And then Val Helena decides to drop a bombshell of her own. I think it's time we went our separate ways, she says, and the entire table goes quiet again.
What are you talking about? Maxis says. The problem you're dealing with could take weeks or forever to solve, Val Helena says. But I have something more pressing to deal with first.
Maxis eases back in his seat, a furrow on his brow.
What part about all of us die in 6 months do you not get, lady? Finding Citadel is the only priority we got.
She isn't so quick to respond as she casts her gaze down at the table's rough wooden surface.
There are worse things than death, she says. And if you're right, if we fail to get the nano back in time and our bodies die, then we'll all experience it as well.
The way she says it sends chills up my spine.
What do you mean? Gilly asks.
I mean, what happens to you here when your body dies in Citadel?
I never even contemplated that.
Won't we just die, too?
In a way, Val Helena says. But not like you think. You lose connection with your humanity, but you don't cease to exist. You become something else.
Now she's really got me spooked. You mean a shard wraith? Maxis says, dropping his spoon into his wooden bowl with a sigh. Don't tell me that's the real reason you're here.
I hope not, Val Helena says. She was only just starting to turn when I left last. But it's why I need to reach her quickly now, before it's too late.
Reach who, exactly? I ask.
My best friend, Val Helena says. Her name's Rebecca. She's Iko's sister.
Holy smokes.
If I can find her before she turns, then maybe I can still save her.
Turns into what? Gilly says. This shard wraith thing?
Val Helena nods. I want to ask more questions, but I can tell it's hitting a bit too close to home for her. Maybe I'll ask my brother later.
And how do you expect to save her? Maxis asks.
She needs to reconnect to her body. She's trapped in the labyrinth of Onizoso, a place where she can't log out, even when a world boss is defeated. And it's slowly killing her back in Citadel.
This labyrinth place, Rembrandt says. I've heard of it. Some people say it's like a weird version of the plains.
Me too, Maxis says distastefully. And we're not going. No way am I risking all of us getting trapped in there.
That's why I said we need to part ways, Val Helena says. Time is running out for her. I can't waste it searching for Citadel.
Saving your friend won't matter if we don't find Citadel, Maxis says. We'll all turn into Wraith then.
I don't care, Val Helena shouts.
There's more to it than that. If her time runs out, then I need to be the one to do it. Understand? That's why I need to move now.
Do what? Gilly asks. Kill her before she turns completely. Or kill what she's become, if she already has. My blood goes cold. I'm barely processing all of this.
You need me to help you kill Iko's sister?
Yes, Val Helena says as she looks down at me. If it comes to that.
I hope you can appreciate why I couldn't share any of these details with you until now, Rhys. It's just too much.
It's okay, I say. I reach out to place my hand over hers when I see tears well in her eyes.
I understand. I'm still here for you, Val.
Seems to me you'll be buggered either way, Rembrandt says. You're really going to put yourself through all that?
I have to, she says.
I got her stuck in the labyrinth. I'm the reason she's in the state she's in. It's my responsibility.
A pause settles over the table, everyone focused on their own thoughts.
Well, the way I see it, Gilly says, there's no reason for us to split up at all. The two goals need not be mutually exclusive.
Maxis looks at her.
Huh?
You need nano shards and a way to find Citadel, right?
She says, looking at him.
If not, we're all going to die or turn into wraiths or whatever. And Val Helena needs to find her friend. But we can still accomplish your goal by helping Val. Don't you have to kill some Night King or something, Val?
Shadow King. And yes, it guards the entrance to the labyrinth.
And I'm assuming he'll drop lots of shards, right?
Perhaps, she says.
Gilly beams with a smile.
So we can do both. We help Val, and then we all find Citadel together.
We could get lost in that labyrinth looking for her, Maxis says. It's not something I want to risk. And besides, if we find the builder that's near Citadel, we won't need to kill any bosses. That'll be all the nano we need right there.
Well, I hate to say it, Val Helena says. But at the end of the day, the choice isn't up to you.
She looks at me.
It's up to him.
My heart jumps as I snap out of my daze.
What?
You're the main tank, Rhys, she says. We can't do any of this without you. So you need to decide.
Hey, I can tank just fine, Maxis says.
Can tank, yes. But you're not a tank, Val Helena says.
Not a proper one. And I need one for what I'm doing. A dodge tank, specifically, for the Shadow King.
And if you even think you're going to fight a builder, you'll need one as well. So it's up to you, Rhys.
Where are we headed to next? My brother groans and rolls his eyes. I look to Gilly.
I think Gilly's idea is best. We can do both. But Val Helena's mission comes first.
Sorry, Mike, but it's the main reason I came here.
I agree, Rembrandt says. It won't hurt our mission, none. Like you say, it could take us weeks to find what we need. But we need to stick together. It's rare enough to find other Shard Warriors out here. No sense in us splitting up.
Maxis glances at Rembrandt over his dark glasses.
Man, whose side are you on?
Val Helena nods.
So it's decided then. Our next move will be heading to the Vale of Sorrows.
Okay, hold up, Maxis says. This isn't happening.
It just did, Val Helena says, leveling eyes with him.
Tension fills the air as they lock gazes. My brother's face is stern. So is Val Helena's, but she has a slight smile tugging on the corners of her full lips.
Mike, Rembrandt says. They're talking sense, mate. We got a whole month. A few days' detour won't hurt.
Maxis glances at Rembrandt and then blows out a frustrated sigh.
Fine, you win. But if you guys are all overruling me to go on this suicide run with Ms. Gentle Giant here, then I'm at least going to be the designated driver.
He taps his thick index finger on the table.
And I say, we're not leaving this village until those two noobs over there are max level and get some decent experience and gear. That's still my kid brother and Bruce's daughter. And besides saving my mom back home, keeping them alive is the only thing that matters to me.
I'm both embarrassed and warmed by his words. Maybe my brother really does love me.
Hey, Valhelena says softly as she rests a hand on my brother's forearm. I understand that. They're important to me as well. So I agree. Getting Gilly and Reese leveled up should be the top priority before we go anywhere else.
I look to Gilly, and she nods. Sounds like a plan to me, I say. And we can probably help this village, too. There's a lot of stuff that needs to be built around here.
Just don't get too attached, Maxis says, because we won't be staying here for long. You two need to be ready to go in a couple of days. The Vale of Sorrows is a good trek from here, and if she's in a hurry, then you two need to be ready to go, pronto.
A couple of days? Gilly says. But I'm only level 26.
Maxis belches loudly and then gets up from the table.
Then I guess you got some work to do.
We decide to make a fresh go at it in the morning and bed down for the night in the common hall. Wilbur brings us some blankets and more water, and we each find a spot to settle in. Gilly and I find a corner to ourselves, while Valhelena, Rembrandt, and Maxis spread out. The floor is hard, and the thin blankets do little to add comfort, but as I lay on my back with Gilly nestled beside me, I think I'm the happiest guy alive.
I'm exhausted,
Gilly says with a yawn. I chuckle.
You always did log off way before I did every night.
That's true.
She pauses for a moment.
I still can't believe we're here, alive and kicking in the real world. I just ate real food as my game character. How crazy is that?
Totally crazy.
Gilly yawns again and then gives me a kiss on the cheek.
I'm just happy I'm here with you. Night, Reese.
I curl my arm around her and return the kiss on her forehead as she snuggles into my side.
Night, Gilly.
Before I know it, she's snoring softly, and after a few more minutes, so am I. I'm having a strange dream where my mother's cheering for me as I tank a giant golem when I'm yanked out of my sleep by a soft creak of wood.
Your awareness increases by 0.3. Skill up. Your awareness is now 38.
What the heck? Loud snoring assaults my senses, and I recognize it instantly as my brother's. Gilly is still snoring beside me as well. I lift my head and can see Rembrandt asleep in the opposite corner of the common hall. Soft moonlight spills into the room as the main door opens with another creak. Through the gap in the door, I can make out Valhelena's large silhouette as she slips outside.
Val?
She could just be going to the bathroom or something. Wilbur did show us where the outhouses were, adjacent to the common hall. But a small part of me worries that she might be trying to leave on her own again. It wouldn't make sense, of course. But I stay awake anyway, waiting for her to return. A good 10 minutes go by with still no movement, and I start to get worried again. After a minute more, I untangle myself from Gilly's sleeping form and sneak across the hall to check for Valhelena. I open the door slow enough not to creak, and then slip outside into the night. The full moon is high in the night sky overhead, and the village is illuminated by its soft glow, casting shadows as if it were midday. I head toward the main square, and then hear a voice behind me. Up here. I turn to see Valhelena sitting on the rooftop of the common hall, her knees pulled to her chest. With legs as big and long as hers, it's a sight that looks cute and comical at the same time.
How'd you get up there? I say.
I'm kind of tall, so I used a barrel to make a step stool, she says.
You might have to climb. Though, as a ninja, that shouldn't be too much of an issue.
I chuckle and sprint at the wall, then run up it vertically with my wall climb ability. I plop down next to her, and she laughs.
Or that. Sorry for disturbing you, I say. I got worried when I didn't see you come back. It's okay. The view is nice up here, so it's worth sharing with someone.
I gaze out at the river along with Val Helena, watching as it flows lazily by the village. Just past it is the forest, which then stretches into rolling green hills that reach toward a vast mountain range beyond. The sight is majestic, made even more so by the eerie glow of the moonlight above.
I missed this place, Val Helena says. The shards are a close copy, but actually living out here is a different story.
I nod, but then something doesn't quite make sense.
I thought you said you were dreading coming back here.
For what I have to do, yes, she says.
But not the actual place itself. You may find this hard to believe, but I actually spent close to 10 years of my life living out here.
I nearly fall off the roof.
What?
She merely chuckles.
You were stuck on the surface for 10 years?
Not stuck, she says. I chose to stay. She pauses. We all did at first.
All? Who else are you talking about?
She glances down at me, her goddess-like features catching the moonlight.
You ever heard of a guild called the Silver Rangers?
Of course I'd heard of them. The Silver Rangers were the first guild in Nazgard to ever defeat a world boss, as far as recent history went, anyway.
You were one of the Silver Rangers?
I was their leader, she says.
Iko was my right hand, and her sister, Rebecca, was my best friend.
Holy crap! This is blowing my mind. How old are you, then?
Hey, I told you about asking that question.
She pokes me in the ribs.
Let's just say that I was probably a few years older than you when I first came here. It was all wild and new back then. Scary, too. We didn't know what we were doing.
How did you survive out here that long?
Same as we're doing now. We got to a safe zone, found a town, laid down roots. A lot of us eventually went back. They had families and stuff. But us three, we didn't have anyone. Only each other.
What do you mean?
Iko, Becky, and I grew up in an orphanage in the hub. Compared to what we had to go back to, this place was a dream.
I can still just barely fathom it, but as I stare out at that moonlight, I can understand the appeal, especially if you had someone to share it with and no one to go back home to. Still, it's mind-blowing all the same.
So you were in stasis for 10 years?
Still am, Val Helena says.
I never left. Even when I went back to the shards, I was kind of scared to log out again. I don't really want to see what I look like in real life anymore. This is me now.
I stare at her, perplexed, to think she actually made the game into her true self.
I suppose I owe you that story now.
Huh?
About what happened between me and Iko, she says.
Fitting for bedtime, I guess.
Plus, you've heard half of it already.
Well, I'm all ears to hear the rest, I say.
Val Helena smiles, then looks back out at the river. We grew up together, like I said, formed the guild together, came here together. Looking back, I think Iko was always jealous of Becky and my friendship. We were never the Three Musketeers, you know. It was always Val and Becky, with her little sister Iko tagging along. I think she really resented that.
Is that why you guys sort of hate each other now?
She shakes her head. No. Iko is a hard person to like in general, but a lot of the animosity now stems from what happened when we left, and why I needed to get back here.
You mean Rebecca getting stuck in the labyrinth?
She nods, and I see her swallow a lump in her throat. It was all my doing, right from the start. Iko was starting to get tired of this place, and though she never said it to me, I think Rebecca was as well.
I didn't want to go, though. Even though the people around me were AIs, I always saw them as real. Still do. But I don't know if it was the same for Aiko. I think it just became another thing for her to resent, and perhaps direct at me. Anyway, I was always the one trying to find new and challenging things for us to do, so I suggested we try to explore the labyrinth. From the beginning, Aiko was against it, but I knew Becky would be up for the challenge. It gave us more to do, more of a reason to stay. Aiko was the tank, I was the damage, and Becky the healer. Perfect trio. We did a bunch of quests and stuff to prepare for it. Got better gear and items.
Is that how Aiko got Shadow Copy?
No, she had it long before that. She bought it, remember? Back in the Shards. That's how we beat the world boss the first time. When we went up against the Shadow King, though, it was just us three, plus a few natives we knew. It was awful. Much harder than a world boss. Your brother wasn't exaggerating when he said it was 10 times harder. The natives all died. Aiko came close to dying a bunch of times herself. I think it was that fight that really broke her. Valhelena pauses, and I can see tears in her eyes as she stares out at the river. When we got through it, she wanted to leave. Not just the labyrinth. I think she wanted to leave and go back home, period. She refused to enter the labyrinth, but like a bonehead, I pushed Becky forward, just to take a look around. I knew something was wrong as soon as we went inside. I can't describe it, but it was like something else was crawling around inside my head. Something else? Like I said, I can't describe it, but anyway, we didn't get too far before Becky and I got separated. She fell down to a floor below us, and I couldn't figure out how to get to her. So I ran back to the entrance to get Aiko to help. That's when everything went wrong.
What happened?
She shakes her head. It's all very confusing, but time must somehow run differently in there. We were only inside for about an hour, but when I came out, a day had passed and the Shadow King had respawned. When I found Aiko, she was furious, especially when I told her that Becky wasn't with me. I tried to get her to beat the Shadow King again so we could get to her, but she just wouldn't do it. Or maybe she couldn't. Either way, she blamed me for everything. That was excuse enough for her to run back to the Shards when the next world boss was defeated in Citadel. But I don't remember anyone beating Volnar since you guys. Besides us, I guess. Doesn't have to be in Nazgar. Could be any of the Shards. I nod. So you came back, too? Yes, she says. I couldn't raise the help I needed to get back into the labyrinth. Not here. The natives lack the abilities we do. Sort of like NPCs, I suppose. I knew going back and finding real people to fight the Shadow King was the only way. And so that's what I did. I went back and switched to Paladin so I could tank and take the risk. But then I met you. Her massive shoulders heave in a sudden sob. I hope you can forgive me for dragging you here. For asking you to do this thing for me, Rhys. My God, I'm so sorry. I'm sorry to ask you to bear this burden with me. Val. I rest my hand on her back as she sobs again. I know I had no right, but you were my best hope. Still are. It's why I hate Aiko so much now, too, she says, her tone bitter. She should be the one doing this, not you. But ever since she got back to the Shards, it's like she's forgotten all about this place. All about her sister. Starting that live stream and playing like the last 10 years never happened. It's like she's a different person. In a way, I think, and heaven forgive me if I'm wrong, but it just seems like she almost takes glee in it. Like it's her way of finally getting back at us for the friendship she resented all our lives. I don't really know what to say, so I just listen to her. I know it's a terrible thing to think, she says, but it's almost like I need to. It keeps me from blaming just myself,
I thought that when she helped us with the world boss that maybe she had come around. But then she left the chamber so quick. I just knew she went back to the game again. Like the damn coward she is. Or has become, anyway. I never actually saw what she pressed, I admit. But she wasn't with us, so I guess you're right. Valhalla shrugs. I never rightly saw either, to be honest. But I know her well enough. She's terrified of this place now, and takes glee in my anguishing over it. Why was she even trying to fight the world boss then? Or Maxis, even? If she didn't want to come back here, why was she trying? Was she truly just doing it for the money? Valhalla shrugs. Maybe. Who knows? Since she returned to the game, she's been living high on the hog in the reality shards. Maybe it's the attention she loves. Mostly, though, I think she was doing it to mock me. Or block me, even. She had zero interest in fighting Volnar until she found out I was going to. It's like she wanted to keep me from returning. To erase completely what had happened here. To her, I think Becky is already dead. They never had the best relationship, but they're still sisters. I just can't understand why she's acting like this. It's like she's happy Becky's gone. Jeez, Val. I don't know what to say. That's terrible. I look up at her. But you can count on me. I'm not going to let you down. We're going to beat the Shadow King, and we're going to save your friend. We're going to save Becky. Valhalla sniffles and crushes me in a hug. I don't deserve a friend like you. Thank you, Rhys. She kisses me on my forehead and ruffles my hair. Now, you better go on back to bed before your girlfriend catches us up here and gets the wrong idea. I laugh. Same for my brother? I wink back at her, and I think I actually make her blush as she laughs with me. I'll see you in the morning, she says. We've got a long road ahead of us. Chapter 6. Redirection. We get up early the next morning, and after a breakfast of fresh fruit and nuts, we each go off to explore the village and map out a plan for the day. Gilly and Valhalla decide to explore the village itself and talk with the villagers, while Maxis and Rembrandt go on another scouting mission in the general area. I decide to meet with Wilbur in the village center and get some town administration done before I find a place for Gilly and I to go level for the day. After my late-night chat with Valhalla, ideas have been itching in my brain about the types of improvements that could be made to the village and what we can do to help. The morning sun is still weak when I venture toward the village square. We got up quite early thanks to the roosters crowing outside the common hall. The townspeople are already busy at work, though. Farmers tend the fields while others work to mend the homes that were damaged last night. I bring them up on my HUD. Actions in progress. 1. Repair house. Labor, 25 units. Wood, 15 units. Percent complete, 58%. Quest available. Assist with repair. Plus 100 XP. Plus 10 favor. 3 more actions in queue. Number 2. Repair house. Number 3. Repair house. Number 4. Repair house. Plus 10 favor? I recall seeing that before when we cleared the 3 quests to claim the town. I look it up and see that there are several levels of favor you can gain within a town, each with a different type of bonus. Favor level 1. Plus 5% discount on goods and services. Plus 10% XP boost in area of influence. Favor level 2. Plus 10% discount on goods and services. Plus 20% XP boost in area of influence. Favor level 3. Plus 25% discount on goods and services. Plus 30% XP boost in area of influence. Favor level 4. Plus 35% discount on goods and services. Plus 40% XP boost in area of influence. Favor level 5. Plus 50% discount on goods and services. Plus 50% XP boost in area of influence. Your favor level for Brook Run Village is level 1. 50 of 100 favor to next level. Nice. Only 50 more favor points to reach level 2? That 20% XP boost will come in real handy to help us level. I also noticed that there are negative levels for gaining hate. A good thing to avoid, I suppose. I wave to Wilbur when I see him. He sat on a small wooden bench in the middle of the village center, smoking a pipe as he oversees the work being carried out on the cabin repairs. He smiles when he sees me and offers me a seat next to him.
"Sleep well?" he asks.
I nod, though my back is aching something fierce from the hard wooden floor. I'll never complain about my crappy mattress back home ever again.
"I see the repairs are going quite well. How can I lend a hand?"
"You can probably help by hauling materials from the wood stores," he says.
New quest available. Cabin repairs. Carry building materials from the wood stores to the affected homes. Reward, plus 100 XP, plus 10 favor.
"Sure thing," I say.
"You have accepted the quest, cabin repairs."
"I'll get to that in just a moment," I tell Wilbur. "What else can we help with, though, on a larger scale?"
"How do you mean?"
Wilbur says.
"In order to grow the town, what things do you need?" While Wilbur pauses to think, I have a peek at my hut again. There are dozens of options available for construction.
House, bank, shop, blacksmith, windmill, barracks, field, fishery, barn, silo, sawmill, tannery, pen, wall, stockade, market, inn, tavern, still, winery, brewery, forge, sewer, aqueduct, town hall.
Some of the options are grayed out, meaning they need certain prerequisites met before they can be constructed, and others expand into further trees with specializations. Just the sight of all the options has my mind ticking with ideas of how this small village could one day be something bigger, like my starting town of Timberdale back in the Shards, maybe even something as big as Swifttide. I wonder how big the town Val Helena built eventually got. After 10 years, it must be massive. Or maybe it would take 10 years just to grow from a village to a town. This is the real world, after all. Things might not happen as quickly here as they do in the Shards.
"Our safety is my greatest concern at the moment," Wilbur says finally. "If you hadn't come along last night, we would have been wiped out by the goblins. A wall to protect us would be a great advantage."
I pick the wall option, and then specify defensive perimeter to check it out. Wooden perimeter wall, plus 50% security, plus 10% morale, minus 10% trade. Labor, 1,000. Wood, 1,000.
A hefty price tag.
"We could probably work toward that, I guess."
"We could also eliminate the main threat in the area," Wilbur said. "The goblins have taken over some nearby mines. It's why they keep raiding us. With you defeating their champion last night, they've lost most of their strength. What's left of them would not pose much of a challenge for you. If you can clear them out, we could even take back the mines again."
New quest available. Remove the Goblin Horde. Reclaim the Brookrun Mines by defeating the Goblin Queen and her minions. Defeat Goblin Commanders, 5. Defeat Goblin Champion, 1. Complete. Defeat Goblin Queen. Rewards, 100,000 XP, plus 200 favor with Brookrun Village. Control of Brookrun Mines.
Holy cow!
My eyes widen as I read the details. A quest like this would kill 2 birds with 1 stone. Maybe even 3.
Wilbur, I think you just found yourself a goblin exterminator.
You share a quest with your party. Remove the Goblin Horde.
"So, what do you guys think?" I ask when I see the quest pop up on their HUDs, their eyes glowing.
It's mid-morning now, and both Gilly and I have reached level 2 in favor by assisting with the cabin rebuild and running a few small tasks for the villagers here and there. Maxis and Rembrandt have returned from their scouting mission, and we're now back in the common hall, sat around a table, studying the quest details.
"What level is the dungeon?" Rembrandt asks.
I shrug.
"Doesn't say, but the goblins can't be much tougher than the ones we fought last night. And with the champion defeated, Wilbur said the dungeon shouldn't be too hard to beat at all."
"He's right, Val Helena says. I've cleared low-level dungeons like this before. Once the champion is defeated, it's pretty much cake. It'll probably be good XP for Gilly, too.
Maxis grimaces. I suppose it'll do. Let's saddle up. Those mines are probably a good hour's hike from here.
Hold on, handsome. Val Helena rests a hand on his shoulder. We can't all go and clear it. The XP split will be too high.
Well, I'm not letting them go by themselves.
Val Helena laughs. Gosh, you really are the overprotective big brother type, aren't you?
That's kind of sweet.
Maxis mumbles something inaudible, but I'm pretty sure it's a cuss.
Can't we just not party up or something? Gilly asks.
The XP won't be split evenly if you're not in a party, Val Helena says. The majority will go to whoever does the most damage, so you still wouldn't get much.
Fine, I'll go with them then, Maxis says. Splitting three ways is better than five.
The thought of just my brother coming with us has me suddenly feeling less enthused. The last thing I want is him bossing me around, especially in front of Gilly. It must show on my face, because Val Helena jumps right in to save me.
Actually, I could really use your help around here, the half-giant goddess says. I got a quest to chop down some trees for more wood. Sure wouldn't mind the helping hand.
And then she winks at him. Maxis furrows his brow.
You're as strong as 10 people. Why do you need my help?
Val Helena lets out a goddess laugh.
Wow, you really are just like your brother.
What? He says. I turn a little red. I know exactly what she means. Clueless.
Oi, I don't mind playing chaperone, mate,
Rembrandt says, clearly less clueless than my brother and I.
You go give the big lady a hand. I got the kids. Don't worry.
My spirits lighten immediately. Going with Rembrandt is a much better option. Plus, a ranged DPS like him will have us clearing that dungeon in no time.
Sounds like a plan to me, Val Helena says.
Thank you for offering, Rembrandt.
Call me Rem, miss.
The cyberpunker tips his head in a bow. Maxis still has a sour look on his face.
We'll be fine, I say. And if we find anything that's more than the three of us can handle, we'll come back. Right, Rem?
Absolutely, mate.
Maxis looks at us, and then Rembrandt.
All right. Just don't take any chances with my little bro, man.
Or his girlfriend,
Gilly pipes up. That gets a laugh out of everyone, and even a stiff chuckle from my brother.
Or his girlfriend, Maxis echoes with a smirk.
All right. We'll see you guys when you get back. I want to start going over some ideas for where to head next. Gilly might be able to level in there, but she still needs scrolls.
I got that covered,
Gilly says. Everyone looks at her.
You do?
I ask.
Yep,
Gilly beams.
And it's on the way, too. Let's go.
Chapter 7. Pit Stop. I head out with Gilly and Rembrandt into the open forest, leaving the village of Brookrun, as well as my brother and Val Helena, behind. Gilly is the navigator this time, guiding us from what I assume is a map on her HUD. Rembrandt stays a few yards ahead of us, and when we set off in the chosen direction, his mirror shades glance back and forth as he keeps an eye out for trouble.
So where are we headed exactly? I ask.
We're looking for a hermit, Gilly says.
A what?
An old gnome that lives by himself out here in the woods.
Gilly hikes up her mage's robe as she trudges through the underbrush.
When I was talking to the villagers earlier, I asked them where I could maybe buy some magic scrolls. They said that, aside from heading to a major city, this old dude named Blacktop would be my best bet. They said he's a real pack rat and likes to trade stuff.
What are we going to trade him?
Gilly shrugs.
Let's just see if he has any scrolls first. Then maybe we can do him a favor or something.
We travel through the forest for another 20 minutes before Gilly indicates that we should stop. I don't see anything particularly different from the pine trees we've been trekking through for the last hour, though.
You sure you got the right spot?
Rembrandt asks.
Should be. I had the villager mark it on the map.
I checked the map myself, and sure enough, we are on the spot where Gilly placed her waymark.
Maybe the villager had it wrong.
Or maybe the goblins got him, Rembrandt says.
This area's pretty out in the open.
I focus my senses. If something is supposed to be here, then maybe it's hidden, which means it has to be either up or down. Looking up, all I can see are the branches of the pine trees. There's nothing in them. That leaves the ladder. I look more closely at the ground littered with pine needles. As I kick them about, I hear a faint creak.
Your awareness increases by 0.3.
Guys, I think I found something. I kick away the needles and uncover a wooden door buried in the ground. It's about 3 feet square, and there's no obvious handle or way to open it. But there is an eye slot embedded in the center of the door.
Did the villagers say the place would be underground?
Gilly shrugs again, but then her face lights up with recollection.
Oh, yes, they did say it was well hidden.
I laugh as I roll my eyes.
Always so late with the details.
She just grins.
Sorry.
I stoop down and knock on the door.
Hello? Anyone home? Blacktop?
We wait a few moments before I knock again. The eye slot falls inward, perhaps on a hinge, and the business end of a double-barreled shotgun comes poking out.
Bloody hell!
Rembrandt cries as he pulls his pistols.
Don't shoot!
I say, raising my hands. What the heck? I totally didn't expect a gun. A gruff voice answers from the other side.
Who are you? And how did you find me?
I'm at a loss for words as I stare down the twin barrels of death pointed at my face.
We're Shard Warriors,
Gilly says quickly, panic in her voice.
Villagers from Brook Run said that we could find you here. We just want to trade.
Trade what?
We need magic scrolls, I say. The healing type, if you have any. And would you mind lowering the gun, sir? We really don't mean any harm. There's a mutter I can't comprehend, and then the shotgun slowly withdraws, replaced by two bloodshot eyes that squint in the sunlight.
From the shards, eh? Which shards?
The crystal shards, I say. My name is Reese, and this is—
I didn't ask your names.
The man, Blacktop, I assume, says gruffly.
And I know what the shards are called. I asked which ones you're from.
I look at Gilly, puzzled. Nazgar?
Nazgar?
Blacktop lets out a grunt.
Doubt you got anything I'd be too interested in, then.
I'm from New London,
Rembrandt says. The bloodshot eyes go wide.
Let me get a look at you.
I move to the side as Rembrandt crouches over the door. A wheezing laugh comes from the other side.
We'll all be. All right, I'll give you 5 minutes.
I'm about to ask if he has any scrolls when the peephole slams shut. The mechanical workings of a latch sound from behind the door, and then the whole thing swings inward to reveal a ladder underneath. Blacktop is standing on it a few rungs from the top. If his name has anything to do with his hair, then it must be ironic, because his is completely white and thinning at the top. His full beard is much the same, and is long enough to be plaited at the bottom. His face is hardened with wrinkles, and his skin is pale, from lack of sunlight, I presume. He lowers himself down the rest of the ladder and makes room for us to enter. I head in first, and when I reach the bottom, I'm amazed at how big the underground home is. I still have to stoop slightly, but it's clearly built for average-sized people. It makes me wonder if Blacktop, with his full 4-foot frame, was the original owner, or if it once belonged to someone else. The room we enter is about 10 by 10, and the walls are earth, reinforced with wooden planks. When Gilly and Rembrandt enter, Blacktop climbs back up the ladder to seal the hatchway, and then leads us down a corridor to an even bigger room. Small lamps light the way and illuminate the larger room as well, which looks more like a garage full of junk than anywhere someone would actually live. Old furniture, rusted armor, weapons, anything you could think of is heaped into piles or scattered across the floor. Blacktop plops himself down in a ratty-looking easy chair as we tiptoe our way through the minefield of debris.
Let's see what you got,
I study the short little man and pull up his stats. Name, Blacktop. Sex, male. Race, gnome. Class, tinker. Level, 85. Guild, Everlast. What the heck? Those don't look like NPC stats to me. And I've definitely heard of a shard called Everlast before. Could this mean... Are you from the shards too? Blacktop chuckles.
You must be new here.
Yeah, they're first-timers, Rembrandt says. How long you been here, mate?
Long enough to forget where I'm from, he says. It's a beautiful thing. You should try it sometime. Now, what you got for trade? Any guns? They like guns here, though they can barely use them.
I can spare you one of these, Rembrandt says, and produces a submachine pistol with a flash of nanodust. Level 65 weapon? B-class?
Not bad, Blacktop says, studying it from afar.
Do you have any celestial magic scrolls? Gilly asks. I need a whole bunch.
Blacktop looks at her a minute, and I see his HUD light up within his eyes as he checks her stats.
That you do. You're a brave one coming out here at that level. Must have had one heck of a party backing you when you fought the world boss.
Gilly shrugs with a smile.
I guess. So, do you have any?
Blacktop eases off his chair and rummages through a random junk pile. Amazingly, in less than a minute, he returns to his seat with a small chest. When he opens it, there are at least a dozen scrolls inside.
Now, Blacktop says, I don't really remember what's in here, but I'll give you the whole thing for that gun.
Can we look at them first? I say.
Nuh-uh, he says. That's the deal. Take it or leave it.
Man, this sucks. What if there aren't any scrolls we need in there? He shrugs.
The beauty of the bargain, my boy.
Some bargain. Then again, what choice do we have? He chuckles as he studies me, and then a furrow creases on his brow.
You sure you're a first-timer? You look awfully familiar to me.
You might have met his brother, mate,
Rembrandt says, which totally makes sense to me.
He's been here plenty of times. Maybe you've seen him. He goes by Maxis.
Doesn't ring a bell, but I'm not so good with names anyway. So, you want the scrolls or not?
I look to Rembrandt and shrug. Pay you back when we get home? The cyberpunker laughs.
You can pay me back when we get to a tech world.
Blacktop's eyes light up.
You're going to a tech world? Across the wilds? You know where one is?
Rembrandt asks.
I know the general direction. If you do, I could offer you a heck of a lot more if you bring me back something nice. Like a flamethrower?
What the heck? This guy has to be some kind of nutcase.
If you like that high-tech stuff so much, Gilly says, then why don't you just live over there?
Blacktop laughs.
You must have had an easy time getting here through the wilds. Most people never even make it out, much less cross them to get to different zones. But if you're going to risk it, I'll give you a shopping list.
And what could you offer?
Rembrandt asks. He looks at me again.
You look like you could use this, my friend.
He gets off his stool and retrieves another wooden case. When he opens it, I see a set of level 85 ninja weapons nestled inside. Blacktop wishes to trade with you. Blacktop offers you a poison kunai plus 5, plus 30 dexterity, plus 30 agility, plus 50 poison damage. A lightning kunai plus 5, plus 30 dexterity, plus 30 agility, plus 50 lightning damage. Blacktop cancels the trade.
Bring me back a flamethrower? And these babies are yours.
Those kunai are seriously sweet. I can't use them yet, but they would be a massive upgrade to my level 75 dark steel versions. Something strikes me as odd about them, though. The combination of poison and lightning, perhaps. Then I remember the drops I got from the goblin champion. As I drag them from my inventory, they materialize in my hands in a puff of nanodust,
just like Rembrandt's machine gun. In a way, it's almost like how items appear in the shards, though I do notice that when they materialize, one of my nano-fragments gets converted to nano-bits and goes down by 3,000. I check the rest of my stash.
You have nano-bits, 7,000 of 10,000. Nano-fragments, 7 of 1,000. Nano-shards, 0 of 100. Nano-crystals, 0 of 10. Nano-cubes, 0 of 1.
I guess even materializing stuff from your inventory costs nano. Any interest in these? I ask, showing him the plate armor and flaming bullwhip. Blacktop frowns as he looks them over.
I won't trade you these for that. But you want something else? How about some local currency?
Rembrandt says.
We could use some of that. Now you're talking,
Blacktop says.
I'll give you 5 gold pieces for the lot.
Gold? Then I recall the currency mentioned in the town building screen. I can't remember what a gold piece was worth, but I think it was a lot.
How about 10? He frowns. 7, max.
Deal.
You have learned a new skill. Barter. Barter. Your chances to positively influence a negotiation increase with this skill.
I hand over the armor and the whip for the coins, and Rembrandt trades the gun for the box of scrolls, which he then gives to Gilly. We exchange pleasantries, and then Blacktop leads us back toward the entryway.
Do me a favor, he says. Kick some leaves and stuff over the top of the door before you go. Save me a trip out and around the back to do it.
No problem, I say as we shake hands. An idea then pops into my head. Perhaps there are other things Blacktop might be able to offer us. Hey, one more thing, I say. You've been here a long time, right? Blacktop pauses and looks up at me.
Yeah?
You ever hear mention of the location of Citadel?
You mean the city?
Yes, where we're from.
He laughs. Never thought about it, to be honest. Don't know why you'd want to go looking for it, but if you did, I imagine it's underground.
Yeah, we know that much, mate, Rembrandt says with a grin. Any idea where?
If you want to know about anything that's buried, then head to the Dwarven Kingdom of Iron Forge. It's down under the Ice Peak Mountains.
A new waymark lights up on my map as he says this. The mountains look to be at least 100 miles from where we are now, toward the northeast.
The dwarves have a charter of royal cartographers there, he says. If it's buried, they're likely to have come across it and mapped it. They're a reclusive bunch, though, so getting them to open up might be a challenge.
Thanks, Gilly says. That's a big help. How about a builder? I ask. Ever seen one of them? Blacktop remains quiet for a moment.
A dead one, I think.
What?
In the wild, he says. The last time I spawned, I think I came across one when I was making my way here.
What did it look like? Gilly asks.
Like the skeleton of a giant snake, he says, except made out of metal. Gave me the creeps. And there were sentries and omegas crawling all over it, harvesting its nano, I guess.
Omegas? I ask.
You didn't come across any?
Blacktop says.
No, we got lucky, mate, Rembrandt says. Just like you said.
What's an omega? Gilly asks, looking between them.
Something you pray you never meet out there, Blacktop says. Giant bioweapons, level 200.
My skin grows cold at the thought. We could have run into something like that.
That's why I'll give you those blades if you manage to get to a tech world and back,
Blacktop says.
But I want that flamethrower.
I laugh. I'll put it on my list. Something else keeps nagging at the back of my mind, though. Something about those kunai. Where did you get them, by the way? The katanas.
Funny you should ask, he says. A tall drink of water breezed through here last night with them. Elven girl. Traded them for a chunk of gold and a little something extra.
He grins.
Best company I've had in a while. No offense to you guys.
My heart beats a little faster as I ask the next question. What was her name? Blacktop's eyes go glossy as he smiles,
perhaps staring at a mental image that only he can see.
Iko, he says, still smiling.